RPC Radio.
Radio. Hello, you're listening to Insurance Covered. Welcome to the podcast that covers anything and everything to do with insurance. Coming up in this episode.
So in my book, I put forward a case for a new vision of the role of the insurance industry in the global fight against climate change. I see the insurance industry as an enabler of climate action, supporting policyholders, investees, and other stakeholders in their transition to a net zero economy.
My name is Peter Mansfield. I'm a partner in the law firm RPC, and in each episode, I'm joined by a guest and we discuss an aspect of the wonderful world of insurance. And this week, our guest is Dr. Franziska Arnold-Dwyer, and our topic is Insurance as the Great Enabler. Franziska's career falls neatly into two halves. The first saw her as a lawyer with Clifford Chance, which she did from 2000 until 2011. But then she left private practice and became an academic, gaining a master's at University College London and then a PhD at Queen Mary University, where she has remained as a senior lecturer in insurance law, contract law, and sustainability. And she has now published a book, which has been described by Professor Robert Merkin as an outstanding and innovative book from one of the UK's leading academic insurance lawyers. That book is called Insurance, Climate Change and the Law, which argues that insurance should be the great enabler of change, which is what we're going to discuss today. So, Franziska, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Peter.
I'm intrigued to know when your path first crossed with insurance. So was it kind of during your decade at Clifford Chance or before or was it after?
No, indeed at Clifford Chance. As a trainee, I did seats in a corporate insurance team and then the insurance litigation team where I then qualified. And I was immediately attracted by insurance law as a contract law with bells and whistles and with an interesting body of case law full of fraudsters and stuff. There's a little bit of soft science and maths with the actuarial underpinning and also the principle of utmost good faith, which is a real oddity in common law.
Brilliant. So we're here today to discuss your book, Insurance, Climate Change and the Law, which was published on 29th of March, 2024. Now, obviously, we're recording this before that date, but you kindly provided me with a proof copy, which means that I've been able to kind of read it, which I have done with enormous pleasure. I confirm that it's absolutely brilliant. Really enjoyed it. So, but kind of, please can you tell us kind of what prompted you to write it in the first place and why you chose to build it around these three pillars of insurance, climate change and law?
So around in 2019, I started to see a lot of sort of regulatory communications and sort of shorter articles on how banks and insurance companies should manage their financial risk from climate change. And it was then that I had one of these hang on moments where I felt really strongly that there was something missing. So it's not just the impact of climate change on an insurance balance sheet, but also what is it, what are the beneficial and harmful impacts an insurer's activities can have on the environment. But when I then started looking around for literature, I found that there was quite a bit on impact investment, but next to nothing on impact underwriting. So I essentially stumbled into a research gap and the basic idea for my book was born.
Brilliant. And the book itself is 331 pages long and it covers a whole host of topics. So the science of climate change, ESG, kind of the many risks posed by the climate crisis, the regulatory environment within which insurance works, and kind of the knotty issue of disclosure obligations that are placed on insurers. So what rather than discuss the whole book, what we're going to discuss is one of the themes of the book, which is the concept of insurance as an enabler, indeed as kind of the great enabler. And this word and this concept of insurance as enabler is used quite a lot in the context of insurance. But what do you mean by it?
So in my book, I put forward a case for a new vision of the role of the insurance industry in the global fight against climate change by not limiting the role of insurers as being just risk carriers in relation to climate risk. I see the insurance industry as an enabler of climate action, supporting policyholders, investees, and other stakeholders in their transition to a net zero economy.
Okay, so that's interesting because it feels as though you're using the concept of enabling in a slightly different way from how it's often used when people talk about it. So often I get the sense that the enabling aspect of insurance is seen almost as an accidental byproduct of insurance. You have insurance, you transfer the risk from the insured to insurers. That enables insured to do things that they wouldn't otherwise do. Hey presto, insurance is the great enabler. But you seem to be using, if I get this right, Francisco, and I apologize if I'm kind of putting words in your mouth, but you seem to be using it in a much more kind of specific sense than that. So you seem to be saying that the insurers should consciously, so deliberately, adopt the role of enablers in the fight against climate change. So is that a fair representation of your position, or is that overstating it?
No, it is. You're right, Peter. So I'm not saying that insurers should be forcing change, but they should engage with and help actors in their sort of value chains with their pathway in the energy transition and actively build their resilience to climate risk.
Okay, so there's two questions that flow from that in my mind anyway. Before I ask the two questions, I want to put that into a little bit of historical context because by and large, historically speaking, insurers have always simply insured what's been put in front of them. So, you know, if one wants to express it in these terms, they have always been morally neutral. They insure anything. But what you seem to be suggesting is possibly a break from that historical position. You're asking insurers to adopt a positive approach. You could even say a positive moral approach. So I'd say there are two questions kind of that flow from that. So the first one, why should insurers do this, given that they haven't done it for the last 700 years? So why should insurers do this? Kind of what's in it for them to change the business strategy that they've had for the last 700 years very successfully?
Climate change is a global emergency that requires all of us to work together and to find a global response. And the communications, in particular the UAE consensus that came out of COP28, explicitly recognizes the role of the private sector in this. So it urges non-party stakeholders, so meaning actors that are not countries and signatories to the Paris Agreement, such as banks and insurers, to really up their game, increase their ambitions, and contribute to solutions towards lowering greenhouse gas emissions and climate resilient development. And I would argue that strategically, the insurance industry must take an enabling role in order to stay relevant and for its business model to survive.
Okay, so that explains why insurers should adopt this positive, conscious approach towards enabling insureds to combat building resilience, I think was how you expressed it, against climate change. But now for the second question, which is it appropriate for insurers to take a conscious lead? So in other words, as I said, insurers just insure what's been put in front of them. It has been the historical position. Is it appropriate for insurers as a private industry to change that approach? Is that not a decision for governments and the United Nations and public bodies? Because obviously, you know, we're still in a situation where most governments around the world subsidize fossil fuel industry. So is it really the place for insurers to take a conscious decision and change in this area if governments are dragging their feet?
It's precisely because governments are dragging their feet, and I don't want to sound too pompous, but given the global threat of climate change, I would say there is a societal imperative to get involved. And this role of stakeholders, and it's been called sort of collaborative stakeholderism in combating climate change, has been explicitly highlighted in decisions from COP27 and COP28. So the role of insurers as enablers is not something that I've invented sort of out of the blue and in the abstract. It is in line with stakeholder models of corporate social responsibility. There are emerging theoretical frameworks on stakeholder capitalism, environmental stewardship, and there's sort of a trend towards a wider meaning of corporate purpose. So really, we're seeing that the role of companies, of corporations, is not just about optimizing short-term profits for shareholders, but it's creating long-term shareholder value by taking into account the needs of all their stakeholders, society at large, including by taking responsibility for protecting the environment.
There's a lot in all of these answers, which kind of we could easily turn this into a whole series of podcasts. So, I mean, I would love to do one about stakeholder capitalism, but sadly, kind of that we can't get into those issues in a lot of detail in this podcast. So, because what I want to talk about is what does the role of enabling actually involve? And in your book, you talk about impact underwriting, and you've already mentioned it in this talk so far, which is, as I understand it, roughly speaking, kind of the strategy of using the underwriting process positively to influence the transition to net zero. And in your book, you split that into three elements, which you neatly, I have to say, neatly summarize as ensuring green, not insuring brown, and greening insurance. So I think it would be really helpful to discuss each of those in turn. So first and foremost, insuring green. What do you mean by insuring green?
So insuring green is shorthand for providing cover for green infrastructure projects, renewable energy systems, and climate technologies during the build and development stage, but also during the operational phase, really to de-risk projects and lower the costs of capital. So that could mean that we utilize existing insurance products, for example, construction or risk that we already know from property and construction contexts, to new assets. But it also already has led to the development of new products. So, for example, there are new insurance products that can provide cover for shortfalls from renewable energy sources. I also think that credit risk insurance and political risk insurance have a really important role to play in de-risking green infrastructure projects.
In what way? So how do you think those policies in particular will assist?
Again, it's an enabling or facilitating role. By giving this credit risk support, it allows the financing of green infrastructure projects to go ahead. So the banks that are the lenders or the financing parties would be looking to insurance companies to basically be available to step in if there's a political risk-related event or a credit risk event that sort of imperils the project.
Okay, so this is, I don't know, let's say a geothermal industry which is located in what is potentially an unstable country, and it's the insurance of, to protect, in case that's nationalised or something like that, it's insurance to protect against that.
Exactly, yes.
Okay, that's really helpful. And so that, in a nutshell, is insuring green. And I think it's fair to say that most people involved in insurance would agree with all of that. I mean, that's just, you know, insurers have always looked for new opportunities to provide insurance, and this is a classic opportunity to provide new insurance. But your second category is perhaps a little more contentious, Franziska, if I can express it like that, because your second category is not insuring brown. And I think I know where we're going with this, but what do you mean by not insuring brown?
Well, speaking very plainly, it means a withdrawal from insuring fossil fuel assets and activities, and it is indeed very contentious. There is, at the moment, no legal requirement for insurers to withdraw, but equally, there's no legal prohibition on withdrawing. So it's pretty much in the discretion of an insurance company. Now, it is often said that a sudden and disorderly withdrawal is likely to be counterproductive. So it is a very difficult area. And where I think reinsurers are at the moment, they are starting to limit their capacity for new fossil fuel projects, but they're not yet pulling out of existing relationships.
Yes, and I one of the problems with not insuring brown is that it's the oil majors who are doing a lot of the research into green industries. And so how do you insure green and not insure brown when it's the same company doing both?
Absolutely. And there's no easy answer to that. But it really highlights the really important role of stewardship and engagement. So to have this dialogue with these clients and customers to tip the balance from what are their fossil fuel operations into increasingly focusing on the renewable energy side of their businesses.
And do insurers have that power? I appreciate that insurers now are far more engaged with their insureds than perhaps was the case kind of 20, 30 years ago. But ultimately, it's still an annual renewal. So insurers provide insurance for on an annual basis. But thereafter, what influence do insurers have? The easy answer is insurers just pull out entirely. But then there's the risk then that fossil fuel companies can't invest the money in renewables. So the answer to that is insurers should get involved and should influence management. But I don't really see how insurers can influence management. I just think there are logistical issues. I love it in principle, but the logistical issues I find difficult to get my head around.
Yeah, it's indeed difficult and probably complicated by the fact that there are insurers out there who are very willing to insure fossil fuels without any questions asked. So by wanting to be an insurer with corporate social responsibility, you are actually putting yourself at a disadvantage, so to speak. But at the same time, I think fossil fuel companies recognize that they must change, and they will be looking to business partners to help them on that pathway to change. So perhaps I'm too optimistic there, but I think it's not just pressure coming from insurance companies, but they will be part of that pathway.
Yeah. And at some point, they're going to have to change because we're going to run out of oil and gas. I mean, I think based on current estimates, there's only about 100 or so years left of both. So roll forward 200 or 300 years, nothing is left. Everything will have to be renewable because there will be no more fossil fuels. Anyway, so that we've looked at insuring green and not insuring brown. Your third category is greening insurance. So kind of talk us through that, please.
So greening insurance is about adapting existing insurance products or possibly developing new insurance products with green features. Green features that help policyholders to shift behaviors and processes and enables them to take climate change mitigation adaptation measures and to support them in improving their preparedness. This is really what we mean by resilience in relation to climate risks. So how can insurers do that? Well, first of all, they can utilize their existing distribution networks and communication channels for raising awareness, not just of climate risks, but also of measures that can be taken at sort of individual household level. They can reward with premium reductions those policyholders that have taken such measures. And they can use their policy terms and conditions to encourage certain behaviors and deter other behaviors. Then another key area for climate action in greening insurance are, of course, claims. And here we're looking at loss events as opportunities for building back better, repair and replace with more sustainable options, and really using reinstatement and replacement as opportunities to take climate action and to adapt to climate risks. What I'm also really interested in is whether we can think about insurance as making ex ante payouts, so payments in advance of an insured loss, to help policyholders to avert or minimize loss from climate change related weather events. So there are lots of interesting legal issues and points here.
Lots of interesting points. I mean, in that answer, you talked about ex ante payments, which so a payment before a loss has occurred. I mean, I can't see insurers being interested in that. So why is that something that should attract insurers to effectively pay out before there's been any claim on the policy?
Well, the Renaissance philosopher Erasmus of Rotterdam, I think, came up with the paradigm of that prevention is better than cure. And in the insurance context, it could mean that investing upfront in loss prevention measures or loss reduction measures could mean that if an insured event occurs, the loss is perhaps less severe and less costly. But I appreciate that ex ante payments must sound like a complete heresy to any insurance lawyer. But I do think this is a sort of potential avenue of building resilience and financially enabling policyholders to do so.
And you mentioned that in the context of investment as well. Effectively, it's an investment by insurers. And that brings us on to kind of a next theme. We've just talked there about it, impact underwriting. Insuring green, not insuring brown, and greening insurance. But there's also impact investment, because insurers hold vast quantities of money and therefore they can invest in things that build resilience into the system. So could you just touch briefly upon the role that insurers can play as investors?
Yes, very briefly. So insurers, as you say, are huge institutional investors. And through impact investment and investor stewardship, they can invest or divest or engage with their investee companies to really foster that long-term value creation that leads to sort of environmental benefits, not just for the investee company, but also for the sort of environment and society at large.
Okay, so we're coming towards the end now, Franziska. Let's return to the book for a moment. Who would you say was your target audience? Who should buy this book?
Yes, I'm hoping to reach a range of people, including insurance lawyers, insurance professionals, compliance regulators and policymakers, academics, but also climate risk professionals and government departments and NGOs and intergovernmental organizations, who perhaps haven't really thought about the role of insurance yet. And of course, any philanthropic foundations and financial institutions who may see opportunities in supporting the role of the insurance industry in fighting climate change.
Brilliant. And what impact are you hoping to have with the book? And there's no need to be modest here, Franziska. Go big.
Okay, I will go back. So I'm hoping to have different impacts with different segments of my audience. But common to all is that I would like to highlight the role of the insurance industry in contributing to climate solutions. Insofar as my book is looking at proposals for insurance products and risk transfer and loss resilience structures to address climate risk and finding solutions, I'm looking for potential corporations with insurers, brokers, and climate risk professionals to develop my proposals into something that can perhaps be implemented and applied in real life. And finally, in academia, we always look for funding, and I'm hoping that my book will be a springboard for obtaining funding for further research.
Excellent. So the book is Insurance, Climate Change and the Law. It's available now from all good online retailers. And in my humble opinion, it should be on the bookshelf of every insurer, every top 50 law firm at least, and plenty of others besides. So finally, Franziska, I'm interested to know, on a much more personal level, how has writing this book affected your own analysis of the climate crisis? Would you describe yourself now as a climate optimist or a climate pessimist?
Well, I would say I'm a climate realist. So in German, we call that a Realpolitiker. And I say that because it's very obvious from the first global stocktake that came out of COP28 that our progress is far too slow, and on the current trajectory, we are on for a 2.5-degree warming by the end of the century. So there are grounds for being pessimistic, but I do think this is often not really a constructive attitude. So Michael Mann, in his book, The New Climate War, refers to this as climate doomism, an attitude of not really engaging because you believe that there's nothing we can do. So rather than giving in to climate doomism, I think we all can and must contribute to climate action and work on solutions for lowering greenhouse gas emissions and building climate resilience. But I also appreciate, and this is also where my starting point was, it can be really difficult to know what this contribution can be and also how to make it happen. And this is why I think the enabling role of insurers is so crucial. It's such an important part of the picture, because insurers can raise awareness and they can support their policyholders and investees and other stakeholders in their energy transition. They can support these climate actions to some extent, and they can support climate finance.
Finally, Franziska, in your opinion, why should undergraduates or postgraduates study insurance?
Well, insurance law is not just a fascinating area of law to study in its own right. It's also highly complementary to other commercial law, trade law, and financial law subjects. And I'd say a background in insurance law really opens up a really diverse range of career opportunities. And most importantly, career opportunities that have a real social impact. So insurance solutions are crucial. So many societal issues and technological innovations. And so I would encourage any student and indeed any practicing insurance professionals out there to look up the Queen Mary University Insurance Law, LLM, and get in touch with me if you want to know more.
Thank you, Franziska. That was absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much for your time.
RPC Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to Insurance Covered, which is an RPC production made possible by Joe Burgess and Mary Mitchell. If you enjoyed this podcast, you'll also love our other RPC podcasts, Taxing Matters, Money Covered and The Work Couch. Thank you once again for listening, and I hope you have a great day.